We join the interview with Jeff Okrepke of Rebuild Coffee Park, describing his escape from the fire.
Directly east of Mom and Dad's house. My parents live in Southern Windsor. And I was like, okay, but it's over in Napa County. It's in another county, you know. Don't worry about it. If anything happens, you know, I'm sure it'll be fine. So I looked at my phone a little bit, and the winds were blowing. I kind of looked around. I was like, oh, it's a little crazy, and saw some stuff on Facebook. Of like, oh, I heard there's a fire over here now. There's a fire on Mark West. And I was like, still being in Coffee Park, like, Mark West is close, but it's like, you know, right across the highway, and it's a forest fire. And in your head, I think that's what people really don't understand when it comes to Coffee Park residents, is because of where it was, a lot of us were in just, I guess, a sort of denial. Because, you know, there was no way you could have convinced me that a forest fire was going to reach my house. There's no way you could have convinced me of that.
No.
And I was like, wow, that's crazy. And I just kind of nodded off and went to sleep. And about 45 minutes later, my sister woke me up. She called again and she said, hey, Mom and Dad got evacuated. You need to call them. And I was like, what? Like, what are you talking about? And so I was like, all right, I'll call them and we'll figure it out. Don't worry, I got it. And I called my parents and they're like, yeah, we got the robocall. They said to evacuate. And so I guess at the time, the winds were blowing directly east. Well, from the time they got that call to when I started talking to them, the winds shifted and started blowing. South. It was a southeast wind.
Right.
Or a northeast wind, excuse me. So it was blowing southwest.
Right.
And to my knowledge, that happened. I'm not a meteorologist. I didn't really recognize all of that was happening. So, you know, I talked to him and I was like, all right, well, we have the spare room. Come on over here. Pack up your stuff, bring the dogs, come here. You'll stay in our guest room. It'll be fine. I woke up my wife. I said, hey, here's what happened. Can you get the guest room ready? I'm going to start, you know, clearing some stuff up in the living room and in the kitchen.
Right.
And as we walked out of the bedroom, we heard this like really bad screeching sound, like beeping sound. And we're like, what is that? And apparently our oven, when the power goes out, it locks into like a self, like an assessment kind of a thing. and our lights started to flicker and we were like, oh, okay, well maybe, you know, it's getting those overhead power lines that go into the substation on River Road. Maybe those are affected and it'll mess with our power.
Right.
Stop getting the room ready and go get all the candles and flashlights you could find. I'm going to go and get some bottled water out of the garage. And, you know, we'll just meet back at the kitchen table and, you know, we'll gather all this stuff just in case and we'll handle it.
Right.
So as we're doing this, the wind starts picking up and I hear a crash and we had some patio umbrellas out back. And so I went out and took those down. As I'm walking back into the living room, for some reason, my front blinds are open. I usually don't leave them open. I just saw my neighbor pull into his driveway. You know, and this was 1:30, 1:45 in the morning, whatever time it was.
Right, not usual, yeah.
And he's a contractor, so he's up early. It was a Sunday night, about to be Monday morning. And I was like, that's weird. And so I go out, I talk to Mark, and you know, he said he's checking on his father off Francisco Ave and making sure everything was okay because of the high winds. And we started to just, you know, discuss how crazy it was. You know, this is such crazy weather. I can't believe it. What's going on? And so his son comes out. He's got a son that goes to the JC. And my wife comes out and another neighbor comes out. And we're just standing in the middle of the road. Discussing it, and the wind started to pick up so bad, we were like holding our hands up to our faces, kind of like on a windy beach where the sand kicks up and you kind of, you know, put blinders over your eyes so the stuff doesn't hit you in the face. And we were in the middle of the road, like, talking like that, and stuff was hitting us in the face. But I just thought it was like the, you know, whatever dirt and particulates are on a typical street, but it ended up being, you know, ash and other things. As we're talking, one of our neighbors, unbeknownst to us, had gotten out. We live on a place called Espresso Court, which is on the northern side of Coffee Park. She walked out and around it, went to Dennis Lane, which is the northernmost part of Coffee Park, backs up to Dennis Lane, which is where I live. Mm. And that's like the county land, and that's when you, if you go out that way, if you go a little further north, you'll hit like Vintners Inn and stuff like that. And she walked around because, you know, same thing, everyone else was kind of like, this is really weird and crazy, what's going on? And news was, and news wasn't like on the spot. It was at that point almost 2 a.m, maybe, and people had no idea what was going on in real time. You know, everything. And so she walked over there, looks up, and that part was on fire, and the fire was coming towards us.
Wow.
And she took off full sprint. She's a woman in her, I'll say her late 50s, early 60s. And she came hauling around the corner back towards our court.
Yeah.
Moving as fast as the spryest 20-year-old.
yeah.
And she just screamed, it hopped the 101, hopper's on fire, jumped the 101. He's got to get out. And we were like, I just looked at my neighbor, Mark, and we were just kind of silent. Like it felt like an eternity. We were just kind of like looking at each other like, okay, we got to go. We'll catch up. And, you know, like, I'll text you or whatever. We ran back into our houses and started gathering things. So we ran in. I grabbed my wife. I was like, you know, I told her, I was like, it's going to be okay. Calm down. Grab some stuff. My my wife's father passed away in Iraq. And so we had some of his memorabilia in a box, some emails that were printed out that he had sent home and stuff like that. So I was like, go get the box of your dad's stuff. Grab Tillman, who's our son, grab him and, you know, get to the car. I'll get the dogs. And so I grab the dogs and throw in the back. She puts the kid in, she throws the box in, I throw the stroller in. And I was like, grab some clothes and we start filling up a duffel bag. I run her out. I'm like, all right, we were going to go together. We started running out of room. I knew we could save more stuff. So I was like, all right, just go to your brother's. I'll meet you there. And, she's like, okay, but you know, call me. And so they just get out, and I grabbed the duffel bag full of clothes. She'd grabbed some photo albums. We started to, when stuff started getting kind of crazy, and we were like, all right, let's like, just kind of start to remember where things are. Like, all right, remember where the photo albums are so we can grab those, know which ones you want to get, and back to this thing. And, because it kind of started to get real, but at the same time, you're like, we're just going to get evacuated.
Right.
The car's going to go out, we'll be back. You know, we're just going to get evacuated. It's not going to get here. It may hit like, you know, like it ended up doing Kmart or Kohl's or something, but it's not going to get to us.
Exactly.
It just isn't going to happen. And I'll get to the how ridiculous of a notion that was in a second, but as I run out to throw some stuff in my car, so I left my car half full because I run out and there's these embers just start falling on the street and blowing down the street, and they're almost the size of a golf ball.
Wow.
And I was like, all right, well, it's time for me to go. And at this point we heard Fountain Grove was on fire, so we thought it was coming from Fountain Grove. Little did we know it was coming from behind us. So we thought it was coming from like straight down Hopper, but it was coming from Mark West over through that area behind Dennis Lane and over into Coffee Park. So I was like, all right, it's time to go. I run in, I get to my back room and I kind of sit there and I'm like, all right, what do I need to grab? And just in the adrenaline pump and the heat of the moment, I thought I had everything. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go. And I run out, lock the door, get in my car, and going back to the point I was about to make about how ridiculous in retrospect it was, but this is how convinced I was that I was coming back.
Right.
As you know, when you get in your car, you kind of stand there, you're facing your house and you open your car door before you step in. I just happened to look up as I'm about to step in and I saw I left my garage light on. And for a split second, I was like, should I go back in and turn the garage light off? Or should I just leave it? And I was like, no, I have one of those energy efficient, you know, coil bulbs. It'll be fine. Like, it's not going to cost a ton of money. It's not going to burn out. Whatever. And that was my last thought leaving my house. Wow. And I back out, pull around the corner, and there's houses on fire.
Wow.
And that's what it was like. Yeah. Oh, man. And I joke with my wife. She took the right way. She went out and drove all the way down to Barnes Road and up to River. For some reason, it was just a mechanical response for me. In the heat of the moment, I was like, all right, time to get out. And I go towards Coffee and Hopper, which is like
the center.
Just jam-packed. Yeah. It's like the main intersection. I get there, and I'm like, all right, we're not moving at all. And I'm like, all right, you know, forget this. And I flip a U-turn, and as I'm flipping a U-turn, I see on the north side of Coffee, past Hopper, I see a lone fire engine and maybe two or three guys, and they have their backs to the subdivision, which is further east from Coffee Park, which is east, I think it was called Sharon Park. It's Skyview, Crestview, that area.
Oh, yeah.
And they have their backs to it, and they're hosing down houses that aren't even on fire yet, but like there's like some flames in the trees,
right.
And they have their backs to maybe, I don't know, 100 other houses. And that's when it hit me. It was like, oh, they just wrote off that area. They can't fight in that neighborhood and win. At least they're convinced they can't win.
Right.
So they're just going to try to save something else. And that's when it was like, oh my God, this is really, really bad.
Yeah.
And I fly up Hopper towards Barnes Road, get stuck in traffic. At that time, we didn't see any police. We didn't see any fire. Then some police came through. Because I guess most of them were up in Fountain Grove and other areas trying to save people.
Yeah.
And people started driving over lawns and down the other side of the street. And hit Barnes Road, went up that way, and turned left onto River. And the last real memory I have of the fire is, you know, I can see some of the places that were on fire a little bit, and it was mostly just a bright orange glow. And I had my window down because it was 75 degrees outside, you know, in October at 2 in the morning. And I was sitting there and I was like looking at my phone, like trying to, because work kind of stop and go, and I didn't know I shouldn't be doing it, but I don't think anybody's going to pull me up the time to text my wife. And all of a sudden, just my entire car lights up, like somebody just flashed their brights on, but it was orange, this giant orange glow. And I turn around, and if you've ever been down Barnes Road by the Vintners Inn, there's these big trees that kind of like, you can't really see over them. And just over those trees, I saw some flames start to spurt out, and realizing how high those flames had to get to get over those trees, I was just like, holy, you know, and a litany of expletives.
Yep.
And then that was the last thing. And I got out to Forest Hill at my brother-in-law's house, and that was that.
Wow.
That was my night.
Whew. And, my goodness. Yeah. And then obviously, you're sitting there not knowing what had happened and, you know, what happened when you came back. I mean, your first time you went back, obviously, that must have been very emotional.
Yeah, so Monday, I was sitting there at my brother-in-law's house. My brother-in-law was like, well, we should go back over there, see if we can save it. Because we didn't know at that time.
Mm.
I mean, the sun had come up. It was probably 8:30 or 9 in the morning. And we hadn't seen those aerial views yet that have become infamous.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, well, maybe we should go back over there and see if it's salvage anything or see what it's like. And my wife immediately was like, nope, you are not going anywhere. You're staying right here with me and your son. And I was like, I think I'm going to stay here. Thanks. So we were like, all right. And then we started contacting my parents. And I called them when I was evacuating. I said, hey, don't come here. Coffee Park's on fire. And they went up to Huerta Gym in Windsor because it was a shelter at the time. And they went in up there. And we got a hold of them. They're like, all right, well, we've been cleared. We can go back to our house. Can you guys make it here? So we took like the most back roads way because everything, I mean, every road was closed at some point in that area, and got to there. And then the next day, we tried to get over there, and I forget where we were going. I can't even remember where we were going to head, but we were going to do something. I was like, well, while we're in our car, why don't we see if we can get into Coffee Park? And we went down San Miguel, and we snuck in, and that Tuesday was the first time we saw it in person. I had a friend of mine that was able to get in and take a picture of my house for us.
Oh,
and
wow.
He called me and just told me, you know, I'm really, really, he's a friend of, you know, a good buddy of mine, you know, one of those good time party kind of guys that you hang out with, you don't ever get serious with it. He called me and I was like, hello. And the first thing he says to me is, oh, Jeff, man, I'm so, so sorry. Mm. And I was just like, all right. And like, kind of like right then, you know, he would not have said that immediately if it wasn't bad. So right. I needed to see the picture at that point. I just knew it was done. And he sent me the picture and then my neighbor texted me and said, it's gone. And,
wow.
You know, but the next day, Tuesday, we got in and it was brutal to see in person.
Yeah. Yeah. I can only imagine. Yeah, you just just lucky you escaped.
Didn't escape.
Yeah,
couldn't get out.
Well, and that, you know, obviously so many individual stories, but you know, I mean, it is coming out now, obviously, that there wasn't enough alarm. It seems to be of the problem in that process. Is that what you've seen, or from your experience?
Yeah, we didn't get, like I said, I didn't get any warning. Our warning was our neighbor running around the corner who took it upon herself to walk over to see what was going on.
Wow.
And yeah, I mean, there's frustration. It's like, you know, when a child gets kidnapped, everybody gets the Amber Alert.
Right.
And I try to be really, really logical about it. Kind of think to myself, you know, this thing went 13 miles in 5 hours. Like, that is an insanely fast-moving fire.
Right.
The Hanley fire in 1962 took the same path, except for Coffee Park. It didn't get into Coffee Park. They stopped it, or the Coffee Park area at the time. But it took the same path in 5 days, not 5 hours. And so I sit there thinking to myself, like, so much was going on. Every firefighter, I mean... I have friends that are firefighters, and I've talked to some of them, and you know, you talk to them about their nights, and they're like, yeah, I woke up, I got in my truck, I started trying to drive to where I heard the fire started, and it was already closer than that, and I turned around to try to get home, and I was there to get back to Old Redwood, and I was racing the fire, and it was beating me. And I try to be logical and say, there's so much going on, there's no way they could have known just how devastating it would have been.
Right.
They couldn't have predicted it in that short time frame. You know, hindsight's 20/20, and sure, there's a very emotional, very, very pained side of me that says, just send the dang alert anyways. But you try to be logical, and I want to believe that was the scenario, that they were just so impacted and so crazy that they just didn't think it would be as bad as it was, and so they didn't but, know.
Right.
You know.
Right. No, that's it. It was such an unusual event. Well, the worst event in California history. So you were in there. And so then, well, obviously it swept through and your whole neighborhood was literally destroyed. And so how did Rebuild Coffee Park come about? And, you know, what's happening with it?
Well, it kind of started as just a reactionary thing for me. I think a lot of people in the aftermath of the fire became, for better or worse, addicted to social media and Facebook in particular, because that was the best way to get quick updates. You know, if there was something going on crazy at Fountain Grove and the news focused on that, and you're just sitting there like, you know, if you're me, you're like, hey, what about Coffee Park? What's going on in Coffee Park? I want to know what's going on in Coffee Park. I don't care about Fountain Grove. Like, obviously, I care what happens in the devastation. But at the time, it's like I care about where I live and what was in danger.
Right.
And so, you know, people started going to Facebook to find those answers. And in the aftermath, you know, there's a lot of there's a couple of Facebook groups that popped up and Nextdoor.com where people were kind of using it as an outlet for that cathartic experience of I'm going to vent and say all these things and look to the future and really imagine what we could be going forward and what I could have going forward, because people were looking for a ray of hope at that time. And I don't know if that was a reaction to denial of like, oh, it's not that bad. We have this to look forward to. And I started seeing things that I just knew weren't feasible and weren't reasonable expectations. So, professionally, I deal in commercial insurance, which means I'm an agent for businesses to insure them. And I deal with a lot of contractors that I'm involved with the Engineering Contractors Association and the North Coast Builders Exchange.
Okay.
And so I know how the process works with developing, and I know enough to be dangerous. You know, I'm not an expert by any means, but I'm no more than the average person. And I'm seeing these posts of, well, maybe, you know, I can take my one-story house and turn it into a two-story house for my growing family. And in my head, I'm just like, your insurance is never going to let you pay for that.
Right.
If you had the money to do it before, you could have done it before, you know?
Right.
But you're not going to get that money of an insurance company. Conversely, there are people that are saying, well, I have a two-story house and all the kids are gone, and maybe I'll take it down to a one-story. And it's like, well, your mortgage company is not going to let you do that because they technically own that house, not you. You just own a percentage of it.
Right, you can't devalue it per se, yeah.
Yeah, they're not going to let you diminish the value of their collateral.
Huh.
And, you know, and then there's the outlandish ones of people saying, like, we can write Elon Musk and get solar shingles for the entire community and be an example for what, you know, the future of energy efficiency could be. And I'm like, that's great. So you get the shingles. Who's gonna pay him to do that? Like,
right.
You know, and it's those kind of things. And so yeah. I was like, all right, I just took it upon myself to reach out to people. And I was like, I want to put together a forum. I'm a member of this organization called Leadership Santa Rosa through the local Chamber of Commerce. And, you know, they teach, we put on these days that each have a different theme, whether it be agriculture or public safety or health and human services. And you go and you learn the first year, then the second year, you put on those days for the next class, and part of that is doing panels. And you get people together and you ask them questions and kind of present a dynamic of a certain industry to everybody. And so I was like, I'm going to take that knowledge and base of experience that I have, and I'm going to do that, but with builders and government officials. And
excellent. You're the one to do it.
Yeah.
You're certainly the one to do it.
Yeah.
Step right up to the bat. That's the kind of guy
you
are.
So I put together this meeting at the JC. Yeah, I pulled some strings. I called in every favor, and I had a great panel with some builders like Tux Tuxhorn and Andy Christofferson from Synergy Group. James Bohr was there, district supervisor for District 4, which is Coffee Park, and Mark West from the KIPP as well. And we had Chris Corsi, the mayor of Santa Rosa, Mayor Jack Tibbetts, some people from the Planning and Development Department, some insurance representatives, and some people from the Community Development Department as well. And I just said, hey, do you mind discussing the process of rebuilding and what you guys are going to try to do? And this was on October 25th. So, I mean, we're still less than 3 weeks.
Right.
And so I was like, we're not going to speak in definitives. We're not going to say this is absolutely how it's going to go because nobody knows how it's going to go. There's no blueprint for this. Nobody's ever done this. The only destruction we've seen on this scale is our hurricanes and earthquakes, but those don't necessarily have the amount of insurance that's going to come in because everybody who has insurance has coverage for fire. They don't for earthquake and flood.
Right.
So as we see now, we're now up to $9 billion of insurable losses coming into our county.
Wow.
And I'm like, let's discuss this and how this is all going to work out. And that's how it started. And then we decided, hey, maybe it'd be best to organize and have kind of a neighborhood association where we can advocate for ourselves and help each other sort of for Coffee Park, by Coffee Park. And it's the greater Coffee Park as well. It's not just the original Coffee Park, but, We've met, we've enacted a leadership structure. We've actually become a official organization that we call Coffee Strong. We have a board of directors. I was elected the board president. And we have our website, coffeestrong.com, that people can visit to that people can visit to sign up and get basically find out who their representation is in their area. Right. We have had people step up as block captains and say, I'm in this area. You know, we divided into five areas, the affected area, into basically districts, and each district has a couple representatives, and they're in charge of communication. And so we're full of communication up and down. So down from the city and county and FEMA and whomever else.
We make
sure people know what they need to know. And then up, if there's any issues that pop up, like, why do I have a FEMA debris removal in front of my standing house, a sign in front of my standing house? We go, all right, well, let's find that out and go up the chain and say, hey, guys, why is this here?
Of course.
Great. And they're being responsive up the chain?
Yes, absolutely. It's been very nice. We're growing each day, not only in membership, but in, clout. We have roughly 700 help. What's that?
It's a virtual neighborhood in a way. It's so...
Because there's no homes,
not
is
there.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. It's in your heart and your mind, but it's not on the map.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I think that's why people. I think that's why people are really
unusual.
Wanting to take part in it is because it is a neighborhood, and we don't have our neighborhood anymore. It's a way of getting that neighborhood feeling back and interacting with your neighbors and those that understand your situation, which is a huge part of it as well. It's really taken off to the point where we have about 700 homes represented.
Wow.
When one of our representatives contacts the county or the city or builders, what have you, they listen.
You're setting a paradigm for our Southern California as well.
If it gets pretty bad down there,
it is already.
Even fractionally as bad in terms of home loss.
Way.
Yeah, they're going to need that.
Yes, they are. You're the one.
What's that?
Sounds like you're the one to get this all organized for our state of California.
I'm focused on Coffee Park. Don't put me up in the state yet.
I know. One thing at a time.
my wife is already being tested with how much time I'm putting into one neighborhood. I don't know if I can take on the entire Bear Republic.
No, you'll be a consultant and just have 15-minute phone calls. That's all. Just narrow it down.
You know,
they call you. Right. No stress.
So with this amazing conglomeration of people now, as you said, you have clout and things are happening. That is good news.
Yeah, it's great news. It's really nice to be able to say, like, hey, because it's sort of a representative body. I don't want to liken it to lobbying in governmental terms, but you know, when I or one of my board members reaches out to somebody, they know that if there's something that needs to be done in Coffee Park with a rebuild, that we speak for a great deal of people and that it would behoove them to listen or participate in the process.
Wow. Beautiful. Out of bad comes good, isn't it? That's the obviously how the where you're operating from.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It is a very tough and very, very emotional scenario. I know I've taken on this leadership role and taken on this effort, but at the same time, it doesn't mean that I don't have times where I hurt or long for what I used to have. It's just I don't want to use my time dwelling on those emotions and that loss and that sadness. I want to use it for something constructive that'll help myself and my neighbors, and that's kind of what I'm doing. Putting energy into the positive instead of into the negative.
Indeed, and I think it's going to take a lot of that over the next few years, I think, for Coffee Park and all those areas that are going to be recovering. And I think, yeah, as Hosanna was saying, you'll be a great example, at the very least, to everyone knowing there's strength in numbers and you can get things done.
The steps to take, like all the steps. Nobody has to reinvent the wheel. You can get the wheel written down here, what you've discovered.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's good just because we can also do things, you know, it's not just politicians and stuff like that. It's insurance companies and mortgage companies and stuff like that, where we can, you know, get 70 people who are insured by Farmers or State Farm or whoever, and say, have a united front when it comes to making sure people are being paid the proper settlements,
right,
and not being shortchanged on their price per square foot for their houses.
Exactly. There's so many levels of it. And I think we've got to actually close the interview now, but I really appreciate, Jeff, you telling us about this. And I'd love to check in with you later, seeing how things progress, and so we can keep monitoring what's happening.
No problem. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. And thank you so much for your work, Jeff. I really appreciate it. And yeah, keep up the community work.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. Good
night. Bye. I read the news the other day about what NASA had to say. 20% of our ozone layer's gone. We lost it all to CFCs. Better living through chemistry seemed good at first. It didn't last too long.